Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome to Renee's Heart to Heart. I'm glad you could join me tonight. I apologize again for last night. As you can still hear in my voice, I'm not 100%, but I'm a lot better. Thank you for all the well wishes. Tonight, I want to talk about something because it came to my Facebook page again, and that's the young woman, Bailey, who's in a Florida school. She's 14 years old, and she's bisexual. And she decided, because all of the young people in her school, it's a middle school, are being harassed for their sexual orientation, that she wanted to form a gay straight alliance. Now, when I asked my younger grandchildren what they meant, they all said, that means that everybody's friends. And I said, that's right. That's exactly right. So when this young woman tried to do this, they decided that that was maybe going to stir up more trouble than what they were interested in having, I guess. Nobody's given that information, but as an adult, I'm going to make that assumption. So there was a meeting last night, and they still put it on hold because so many people signed the petition and wrote in that that should be their right to have a gay-straight alliance and that it's a good idea. And one of the officials actually stated some law to the effect of them not allowing social engineering. Now, I don't know about you, but social engineering, that really covers a really, really, really wide territory of speculation about socially engineering anybody. When I read that, I thought, did I read that right? And I looked at it again, and yep, social engineering. So that means that we shouldn't let, Jewish kids go with Catholic kids, and we shouldn't let black kids be friends with white kids, and we shouldn't let fat kids be friends with skinny kids. I mean, where is this going to stop, and why are we thinking that it's, you know, our kids that are giving us the hard time when it's us that's giving us the hard time? So it did open up a lot of interesting thoughts. And ironically, last week when we brought this up the first time, after we went off the air, Shelley and I discussed this a little bit. And I laughed because I said, you know, in the 60s when I was in high school, John Kennedy had started this physical fitness thing, and everybody in school had to run laps, had to do the 50-yard dash, had to do the shot put, had to do this, had to do that. If I had been of that mindset or had grown up in a very judgmental household, which I did not, I would have thought every girl in my gym class must have been gay because they all played sports. They were all into running around the track field. They were all doing this. They were doing that, bouncing around in the girls' locker room with nothing on but a towel. You know, now I know that there wasn't, you know, I'm sure there were some gay girls way back then that didn't let anybody know about it, but couldn't have been all of them. But if I'd have been judgmental, that's what I would have thought. So it led us to the fact that in so many cases, some of the harassment and some of the bullying, because we're not stopping it where it starts, is filtering in to everybody because people are judging by the way somebody looks. And it's like we talked about the other night. If you are if you're too skinny, you're either anorexic, bulimic, or you're sick. If you're too fat, you're a glutton. So, you know, there's nothing in between any of those things. So as we talked, Shelley said to me, Shelley is not as old as I am and doesn't look near as old as I do. She's very physically fit. She's in great shape. But as a young woman, she worked in her father's mechanic shop, and she was taught how to change oil and tires and do all that kind of stuff. And she enjoyed it and still enjoys doing things like that. When I first met her, she had this old Mustang that she held together with duct tape and ingenuity. So I've asked her tonight to talk a little bit about that, because I think that this is one of the things that we need to discuss, along with the bullying that is really, some substance to it. If you're bullying me because I'm fat, you're right, I am fat. If you're bullying me because I'm a glutton, that's not true. I'm not a glutton. So if you're bullying some girl or some guy because he is in touch with his wardrobe and she knows how to play football and they're completely straight, then we need to talk about that as well. So I'm going to bring Shelley in, and I'm going to let her talk about this. And if any of you out there would like to enter into the conversation, by all means, please join us. Hi, Miss Shelley.
Hi, Rini. I'm having some antenna issues, so if my voice gets garbled, just interrupt me and I'll try to move. I'm actually at home right now. I'm not driving this time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm
looking at my antenna, and it's just like it keeps going up and down and up and down. So I may not be clear, and if I'm not, then just tell me, and I'll kind of walk through.
Well, I've known you for 10 years. There's lots of times that you aren't clear, honey.
Well, thank you.
You know,
I
don't miss opportunities like that. You just set me right up, so I have to follow through. Okay.
We need the little guy with the symbols in the background.
That's it. Okay. So, have you been able to listen to what I've talked about tonight about poor little Bailey? What a courageous young woman she must be, huh?
Yeah, and you know, I find that whole thing astonishing. And here she's trying to do something positive. Like you said, if it's a gray straight alliance, that means that they're not trying to make the straight people turn gay. They're just trying to get along, you know, live and let live type of thing. Understand a little bit about what makes me tick. Let me understand a little bit more about what makes you tick. And then let's just get on with living life and having a nice cordial relationship with each other. I mean, what a nice place it would be if everybody that mindset, you know.
How nice is it that a 14-year-old has the substance and the backbone and the tenacity to say, look, you know, I get that you don't understand what's going on with me. I get it. So to be honest with you, what goes on with you is not exactly, you know, obviously the perfect scenario for me. So can't we meet in the middle someplace? You know, when you're 14 and think like that, I think that's wonderful. And what I'm finding out more and more every day is when they are 14 and 13, they do think like that. It's us, very sadly, who changes their mind and their ways. So tell everybody a little bit about what I gave them, a little bit of an update about. Let me set a even better scenario. Shelley will be, we just talked about this the other day, she will be double nickels this year. And for all you youngsters, that's 55. And she doesn't look much over 40. She's she's very, very bubbly and energetic and sparkly faced, big smile, big sparkly dark eyes. You would never guess that she's had the health challenges that she's had, and you would never guess that she's in double nickels. So, but part of that, I think, comes from, you know, like I said, not being afraid to, you know, do the lawn work and do this and do that. And even though, you know, she's been with significant others and everything, I suspect that even when she had a man in the house, she still did a lot of those things because she'd enjoyed doing them.
Yes, true.
So because of that, share a little bit of that, what kind of I don't know that you never have told me that you were actually bullied, but people have dropped innuendos and things like
I've been stereotyped. I've been and the reason that I've never been bullied, because there were other sources of bullying, the reason I've never been bullied is because I quite on my own skin. I was always very self-confident, even when I was during school, and I liked a lot of people. I marked my own drum. Everybody knew that I wasn't timid and that I wasn't really caring whether or not they liked me. So I was pretty much left alone in that regard. But because I was such a tomboy, I mean, I was in all the sports. Like you said, I worked on cars. I really was a tomboy. And my sister was very frilly and liked wearing skirts. First of all, I hated wearing dresses and skirts. I just did. I preferred jeans and T-shirts. So I was always in jeans and T-shirts. And, I mean, that's just what I was more comfortable in. And so some people that met me, and ironically, it was never really the guys. It was always other girls that would assume that I was gay, but only if they didn't like me. And I found that very ironic. If somebody was catty around me or didn't like me for some reason, they automatically pegged me as, the word they used was dyke. I was called dyke a lot throughout my entire life, even into my 30s. If someone didn't like me for some reason, that word came out. I was very fortunate.
I lost you, Shell. Shelly? Let me see. Nope, we dropped her call. She'll be back, though. We live out in the acreage, so cell phone dependability is one of real severe ups and downs, much like our entire system. Here, she's back. Okay, sweetie.
All right, I'm back. Can you hear me?
Yep, I gotcha.
Right. But what I was saying is that that word never bothered me because, first of all, I knew I wasn't. And not that I thought there was anything wrong. I didn't consider it an insult. I knew that those individuals were trying to insult me. But because I didn't think anything derogatory of a gay woman, I didn't take it as an insult. It just was something I wasn't. And so I never allowed it to bother me, but I did notice it. I recognized it, and I realized that people were using it, certain people were using it in a derogatory sense to try and get a response from me, and they never did. But it was something that throughout my life, I had some traumatic relationships. I was engaged to one man who passed away literally the day before we were supposed to go on a honeymoon cruise. So that put me in a position, I mean, you know some of my history. So that put me in a position of not wanting to date for a while. But some people saw my tomboyishness and the way I am and that I didn't have a man in my life and made the assumption that I was gay, and I wasn't. It was just because of some of the things that happened to me in my life. I was very private. I was married. I've been engaged twice. But it was just something that was difficult for me to open up to that type of relationship, because I had two very traumatic relationships, one that lasted 6 years and one that lasted 16 years. So that's my personal history. But, the reason I'm explaining that is because the people that pegged me or that made the assumption that I was one way or another didn't know anything about me. They didn't know that I went through those experiences. So here they're making a judgment call on something, saying something they're trying to say something derogatory that's really just an observation. Because the bottom line is, if I was gay, so what? I wasn't. But if I was, so, and that's what always went on in my head. Well, who cares? I wasn't bothering them. I wasn't trying to to make a pass at them or something. I was minding my own business, and that's why I would never react to it, I find it ironic that people who, it's called homophobia, people that go there, men who are homophobic think that every gay man is going to try to flirt with them, And women who are homophobic, they think that every gay woman is going to flirt with them, and it's going to make them uncomfortable. And that is really not an appropriate way to think, because
no.
People who are oriented to being gay have the same attractions that a heterosexual would. They still have their types. They have people that they're attracted to because of chemistry. And I guarantee you, if you're straight, you're not going to have the chemistry that's going to attract them. You know, and that can't be a blanket statement, because, of course, they're heterosexuals that are attracted to each other, where one person has feelings and the other doesn't. So obviously that happens the other way, too. But it's the exception to the rule. You know,
mm-hmm.
gay people
mm-hmm.
have the same type of chemistry attraction to each other as heterosexuals do. So people just have to relax and not put so much to it, you know, so much mysticism and mystery. It's just an orientation. And we discussed one night, it's an orientation based on genetics. So it really isn't a choice, which is another thing that people talk about. It's an orientation. It's a genetic orientation. And when you really wrap your brain around that, and it takes all the stigma out of it. It's like, let's just kind of get on with our lives. And, you know, like I said the other night, clean your own house and let other people clean theirs. You mind your own business, quite bluntly.
Well, and there, you know, I want to bring in another, this has more than two sides to it, obviously, this entire discussion, but let me say this. I don't see anything wrong in finding out that another female, if you're a female, or another male, if you're a male, finds you attractive and thinks that you're desirable. Why don't you just take that as a compliment? If they know and you know that it's not reciprocated, then it's not reciprocated.
Mm-hmm.
There's not anything that's, I mean, in normal situations, nothing can happen from that except you know that somebody likes you. And quite frankly, I think there should be a little bit more of that. I don't think things like that should be pursued when they're not welcomed, whether it's between a man and a woman or a woman and a woman and a man and a man. I don't think
exactly.
Once you find out that somebody does not find you interesting in that arena, then you should just say okay and go along with it, plain and
right.
simple.
Exactly.
But to find out that somebody that you're friends with thinks that you are desirable and things like that. I mean, gosh, why don't you just take that as flattery? Why don't you just take
that
as something nice? That
actually happened to me once. That actually happened to me once. A friend of mine turned out to be gay. She sort of knew that I wasn't, but put it out there anyway because she was attracted to me. And
mm-hmm.
to be honest with you, I wasn't uncomfortable. I actually started laughing. I was very flattered. And I told her right out, and I said, well, you know what? I said, that's very sweet of you to say that. I said, that's not where my comfort is. I said, but we're good enough friends. I said, you know, I don't care that that's who you are. And I never did. And we never spoke about it again, but I always knew that
mm-hmm.
about her. And she always knew that I was okay with it, and it didn't bother me. And it was just, it didn't mess with our friendship, in other words.
Yeah,
because it was and it was kind of nice knowing that somebody liked me in that way. Whether it was I had guys that, for God's sake, liked me that way. I wasn't uncomfortable around them. It's nice
exactly.
to have somebody think of you emotionally like that, whether you're
exactly.
going to reciprocate in a relationship or not. So just
exactly.
take it at face value. You know what it
That's
what
right.
it means.
There's absolutely nothing wrong with that, in my opinion, at any rate. And I
mm-hmm.
also feel as though. There is, you know, as long as there's an understanding between you, as long as there's nothing that's hidden or that can blossom in somebody else's head into something greater. I mean, I suppose there could be side effects unless somebody said, you know, point blank scenario would be, you know, you're friends with somebody for years and you know that they are. You know, that they are a gay woman and you're a straight woman. And I'm going to tell you a story. I won't tell names, but this is about people I knew. They're older women, and both of their spouses died at almost exactly the same time. And they moved in together. And small town USA, everybody was like, oh, my God, they were gay all these years. And everybody was talking about them and carrying on. And I was pretty good friends with them. And I said, what made you decide to go this way? And they said, what way? And I said, well, everybody says you guys are, you know, like sweeties now. And they both looked at me and cracked up and said to me, do you believe that? And I said, I don't know, nor do I care. I'm just glad that you have each other, because they were both married like 25, 30 years, something like that, right? And they both looked at me and they said, we know that that's what everybody's saying. There is no hanky-panky. We help each other pay the bills. We know each other inside out. We can live in the same home together, and it's just worked out perfectly. And I thought to myself, so aren't you going to set anybody straight? And they both giggled and thought it was very funny that everybody was talking about them like that. It was the most notoriety they'd ever known.
That's
so
funny.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, that and that, but it just shows you our gossipy natures, you know, I mean, come on, you know, to not even know and never even see anything that except for two women moving in together. So, you know, it's kind of like silliness, but I loved it when they told me that. And both of these ladies were in their 60s, and it just cracked me up. And I thought to myself, you know, and one of them was a good cook and the other one was good in the yard. And they said, this is better than I had it with the guys they were married to, you know. And I said,
right.
I said, well, good for you. So it's a good thing. It's a beautiful thing. So, but somebody else wants to join us, and I because I still haven't memorized everybody's phone numbers, I do recognize the number, but I would like you to touch base a little bit more on any kind of thing. Has that ever happened to you in the workplace, Shel?
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
In the workplace, so it happened with a man who was actually, he was a mid-level manager, and evidently I was making him look bad. So he went to my boss and told him that, again, he used that word, he called me a dyke to him.
Mm-hmm.
What he didn't know is that the owner of the company and I had been friends for 16 years, and we're dating. So I went to this guy to tell him, because what happened is he hit on me. And I turned him down. He wasn't my type. I turned him down nicely, but that pissed him off so much. The only way I could turn him down is if I was a lesbian. And I've met other guys like that. If you don't want to go out with them, the only reason you wouldn't want to go out with them, they have such a defective ego, but that's not a normal reaction, but they have such a defective ego that if a woman doesn't want to go out with them, she has to be gay, all right? So he went around telling people that I was gay, but he was telling people that knew I wasn't. So they all came to me and told me. And I just told him, I said, you know what? Don't even let him, I don't care. Let him, maybe that'll keep him away from me. Let him think that.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
That's funny, though. It
was odd because in school it was girls. Outside of school, when I got in the workplace, it was mostly men who had that issue. But it was only men because, you know me for how many years, I have a very strong personality.
Mm-hmm.
And any man who was ever threatened by that, all of a sudden I had to be lesbian. Because a normal woman who's supposed to be, like, in skirts and frilly and all that, I can't be straight and be strong. In those types of times. So, yeah, I had to deal with it. But, again, it was funny to me. It never bothered me. But I can imagine that there were other women out there who were like that were bothered by it. I just have a different personality. I don't take things in that people say negative to me. I leave it on their doorstep.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been happy that I had that. The only time I care about somebody making a critical comment about me is if it's somebody that I respect and care for. And then it would bother me, and I would want to straighten it out. But if it's somebody that I don't guard for, if it's somebody I'm not close to, I really don't care. It's like I told you, a friend of mine at work said to me the other day, it's none of my business what you think about me.
And I
love that because it's true. Why should I care what other people think about me unless it's somebody that I'm really close to and that I really care and respect for? But
exactly.
Just a nonchalant acquaintance or a coworker. Why should I care what they do? They can have any opinion they want. And I wish that people could get a little bit thicker skin like that and not allow themselves to be injured by what other people say. I know that it can be devastating, so I'm not making light of it. But I would like people to start getting more comfortable with who they are And if you recognize that you're a good person, and regardless of what your traits are, what your religion is, your nationality, your sexual orientation, regardless of what your attributes are, if you recognize that you're a good person, then you really, really should just turn a deaf ear to criticism, to nasty words, because the people that are saying those things, first of all, are ignorant, point blank,
yeah.
All right? And they can only hurt you if you take it that way. See, I never did my whole life. I never took it that way. You know, and
well,
so
but that takes years. That takes years. What if you're 14?
But that takes years to develop that.
But what I'm saying,
that's just my personality trait. I had a good self-confidence, and that's one of the things, if you can instill in your children, if we have parents listening right now, if you can instill, and it takes a balance, by the way, but if you can instill a healthy self-confidence where your child is comfortable with who they are, but they don't think they're better than other people, because you don't want to create a monster either. You don't want to go from one extreme to the other.
Right.
But if you can instill
your
child just a healthy self-confidence so that they can stand up for what they feel is right, and that they don't get, you know, they don't get so injured when people say mean things to them, then you're going to have somebody who's going to come out of their school years and be much better able to handle workforce and interactions on an adult level. I really kind of didn't have a lot of support when I was younger. My father was like an absentee parent. My mom was very ill at the time. So I kind of really had to make my own way. I was a protector. I went out of my way to protect my friends and my sister. And I just kind of developed that type of fearless personality, and then it just kind of tracked me into my adult life, and it kind of stuck with me. But because I had that self-confidence, it was just my personality makeup. My sister did not have that type of self-confidence.
Right.
She was very injured by people. She had a very, very poor self-esteem. She's doing so much better now. She's done some amazing things in the last couple of years. But she had a really rough time there for a couple of years because of her low self-esteem and getting so injured by what other people would say and do. And it always bothered me on her behalf. So here you have two siblings, literally different as night and day.
Yeah, well, there was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There was actually 6 of us. Siblings. One passed when she was just a baby, but we're all totally different as well. I'm going to bring, I think this is Gary. I hope this is Gary. He may have something to add to this conversation. Hang on.
This is Gary.
Hi, Gary. How are you,
dear? Hello. I wasn't sure it was you. You sound so...
I know. This is my sexy, sensuous voice. I just turn this on every now and then.
I haven't listened for a couple of days, so I'm like,
yeah.
Is that Renee?
Yeah, it's me. This is much better than yesterday. Yesterday I sounded a little bit like a mix between, I don't know, the Cookie Monster and some kind of a gorilla. Just lots of coughs in between. So, but what do you think of this conversation? What do you think about this young girl? And I think it's Lake County, Florida, which is up in a little bit north of us, who's trying to start a gay straight alliance.
Mm-hmm.
And the school is trying to stop her, and the Florida school officials and everything, and they've actually deemed it social engineering care.
Yeah,
what do you think?
I have to hand it to her for doing this. I mean,
me
to
too.
Come out at such an early age and want to do something like this, amazing.
Yep.
I mean,
yeah, she's 14 years old.
Things have changed. Well, that's a good thing. And I mean, in order to change, you have to put up a fight. And I, you know, all the power to her for trying.
Well,
to make
then the
this happen.
The way she chose, she's not trying to say, you know. We're the chosen ones. We're doing it the way it's supposed to be done. She's not saying we're better than you or anything like that. She's saying, can we just please, you know, be friends?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, for me, that's like very adult for 14, and I looked at the video of her, and she's adorable, and she's not asking for anything but an opportunity to meet and talk with other kids so that they understand a little bit more about what's going on in their lives and maybe have a little bit more tolerance and a little bit less judgmentality.
Yeah, I think there's a huge fear in that, though. I mean, with certain people, though. I understand it. You know, you give somebody an inch, and then they want more, and they want more. And I think that's the fear that, you know, the straight community does have is like, you know, if we agree to this, then is it going to, you know, be, you know, then they're going to want to go to the prom. Then they're going to want to, you know, hold hands in the hallway. And I could see where that mentality happens, where people fear that, like, okay, we got to keep them, you know, we got to keep
in
them
check.
Under, yeah, yep. In check.
Yeah, we got to keep them in check. Okay, so what's the deal with that, though? What is the deal with that? And let me say this, and I'm going to say this out loud because I'm dealing with it in my own way. I watch a soap opera for my whole life since I'm 12 years old, and now they took one of my favorite young characters and made him gay. And I struggled with it. I struggled with it, not because I was upset because he was gay, and if he's gay in real life, I don't have a problem with it, but now I'm worried about him. Because I know what's in store for him. And I think that's where most parents come from. They don't come from a place of, oh, my God, they're going to throw the crucifix up in my face and try to keep them away from him. It's not that anymore. It's the fear for, you know, what people are going to do to your child. Yeah.
Yeah,
I think a lot of the opposition is not coming from the parents of the gay children. I think the opposition, and I would like to, maybe we can do some research and find out if I'm correct or not, but I think most of the opposition is coming from the parents of the straight children, because in my lifetime, I have met a lot of people that think that somebody can be influenced to become gay.
Yeah, I know.
Which is, it's just utter nonsense.
Well, I think we all know people like that. Yeah.
Right. You know, that's why I keep using the word orientation, not choice. It's not something you can talk somebody into. It's not something that, you know, where somebody
you can talk somebody out of.
Yeah. Or you can talk somebody out of. You know, it's who they are. Like, and I'll keep saying it, on a genetic level. Okay. So if your straight kid is hanging out and becomes really good friends with a gay child, they're going to stay straight, and the gay child's going to stay gay. But it's just, why wouldn't you support the fact of them becoming friends and just understanding each other better? It just makes the world go around.
Well, that's the whole point. And the whole point, though, is that this young girl, in the first attempt that I've seen being brought on, except for those kids that I told you about that I met in Miami, who were trying to teach other kids the differences in their cultures and their lifestyles and everything.
Right.
She stands up for something like this and wants to start something that's going to make a difference. And the people that are supposed to be our leaders are shooting her down. That's got me more upset than anything else. And you don't know, because they're so far removed from the school when it gets into the school board, that you don't know who their kids are, or even if they have kids.
Right, right. I'm really concerned about that term, social engineering, though. That smacks of where they think that, again, this goes to where they think that children can be influenced one way or another. And certainly they can be influenced with certain types of behavior, but certainly not with sexual orientation.
I don't know. I don't know about that. I think there's other proof about that in prisons and things like that. I don't mean that it's a complete lifestyle change.
That has to do with availability.
Yes.
And so if they don't have any other source of relief, you know, in that regard,
right,
they're gonna do something they wouldn't on the outside. And when they go on the outside, they revert back.
Yes, but I think there's been a lot of stuff done in regard to that, and that's kind of what people are afraid of, and they're not thinking about one friend being your kid's friend. They're thinking about an entire group. You know what I mean? People, well, we've talked about this 100 times. People are scared of the damnedest things. But
I know.
My point here is that she's making big strides. And according to what I read on the internet yesterday, but I was too miserable to do anything about it last night, was there was another meeting last night. So when I looked it up online this afternoon, it said they still kind of stalemated everything at the meeting last night. So if everybody gets on Facebook and signs that petition again, we have a chance to keep pushing them in the right direction so that they, I mean, if they're really worried about something like this being socially engineering to the public body of a school, then maybe a few of these also intelligent adults would like to participate with the kids.
Of course. I mean, that's a great idea.
Gare, I think that's what you should do.
What's that?
I think you should sit into some of these meetings, Gary.
Oh, man. I have enough on my plate. let me just say, I'll confess everything. I am a gay guy. I've been with my partner 16 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when my mom first found out, I think she was like, you know, a little like, oh, my gosh, she's never going to have kids. Well, where I'm from, you could adopt kids. So I gave her 2 kids. I am not, I mean, these boys are not influenced by my sexual preference at all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm shocked at how teenagers are so, like, you know, want to be with girls and stuff. It's like, wow, I never had that. You know, I was never like that. So, I mean, there's no way I influenced them in any way. You know,
exactly.
One boy is 18, and he's out on his own. And, you know, the Patrick is still, you know, 16. But, I mean, he's talking to girls continuously. And I'm like, is there a way I could convince him? Can I change him? This is out of hand here. No. No, but I mean, there's no way.
I know, I raised 3 boys. I know exactly what you're talking about. Yes.
It's like, gosh. But, I don't know. I mean, this girl is one brave girl for doing this. I think, you know, it's going to take time before people start changing their minds. And it's just like the old days, you know, when slavery was around, though. It's the same exact thing to some degree is, you know, the African Americans got outcasted. They can't use our bathrooms. They can't, you know, it's the same thing. Oh, if they have any rights, they're going to do this and this and this. And, I mean, proven wrong, and now it's another generation of, okay, here's the gay folk. We're not going to do anything to step on your toes. We just want equal rights.
Well, I mean, you know, as a woman, I'd like to say that there are still times in my life, in the year 2013, at age 64, when we're talking about the difference between me and a man of the same caliber, of the same relative intelligence, even though we all know I'm smarter than he is, whoever he may be, and our own experience and what have you. More often than not, I would be treated like the second-class citizen. And I'm aware of that, and I think most of the women that I know are aware of that. And we deal with it in our own fashion, but we're a cranky, vindictive bunch, and we will get even. So I think that it goes back forever, Gary. Anybody who was, you know, the slightest bit didn't have a dimple where somebody else had a dimple, everybody started staring at him. I mean, you know, it's uncanny how we can behave. But the point is now when you look around in a school, you walk through a middle school, you see every color, every creed, every culture, everything that is available is there openly Even there for a while, the poor kids that were Muslims that grew up here and still dressed on occasion from their ethnic background quit wearing that stuff to school because of the connotations after 9-1-1 and all the other kind of stuff, 9-1-1, 2-1-1, what do we call it? 9-11.
9-11.
I have too many three numbers in my head. And but, I mean, we are really, really a united nation. And mm-hmm. and that's what we should be, a united nation.
Mm-hmm.
And embracing other people's differences, in my book, is very fulfilling. It's not, it doesn't hurt you in any way. It gives you more fulfillment. And learning how somebody else lives their life to keep themselves happy and balanced is like an amazing gift to share with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whenever you tell a story, even on Facebook, I tell you all the time how funny you are, and you do things that make me laugh and everything, and you've told some other stories about things that have gone on with you and everything. Sharing those things with somebody, or I think that's one of the things Facebook has done for people, let them share without having the looks on people's faces and everything, and being able to share openly is good for everybody. But for me, I love it because I just think it's a gift when somebody shares with me. It's a gift from them to me to let me into their world.
Exactly.
That's what this little girl's trying to do.
And another thing you guys mentioned is like how straight guys are scared of the gay guys because they're going to come on to them and stuff.
Yeah.
We have the same problem. You know how many straight women want us? Because we care, we're sensitive. We have that same, you know, thing going on with us. It's very uncomfortable.
Well, you know, that's funny because I have always told, you know, I'm going to share a very funny story with you. I was managing a hotel on Fort Lauderdale Beach, and I would say 60% of my food and beverage department were gay men, all over the age of 40. And it's my birthday, and they call me from their local watering hole and say, stop by and have a drink with us when you get off work. And I'm like, you know, and I love them all, you know, and I'm like, okay, I'll stop. So I pull into this bar, and I walk in, and here's all these gay men that I work side by side, dressed in drag, singing happy birthday to me at the top of their lungs. Like 60 of them. I was roaring, right? I just thought it was the best thing I ever had happen to me. So they would share those stories with me as well. And I said to them, I said, well, I understand that because my gay friends, guy friends, are some of the best girlfriends I've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, because for one thing, you're not as catty as us women are.
Yeah.
You know, so I can understand that you get hit on by women because they think that they can corner that girlfriend feel from you. So that makes a lot of sense to me that would happen to you.
Yeah, it does.
Who's the blonde? I'm sorry. I guess this fever is getting to me. Who's the blonde comedian, the female who came out of the closet on her show like years ago?
Ellen.
What the heck is wrong? I can't remember her name.
Ellen DeGeneres.
Oh my God! I could not remember that name. I can see her, but I couldn't remember the name. Hmm. Anyway, I'm going to blame it on my fever. Anyway.
Okay.
But I wonder what would happen if somebody approached her show with what's happening to this young girl. I wonder if media attention would help her situation by getting more because more people are going to be supportive of this than not. When you're talking about small town USA, it's easy to skew the results a particular way. But when you start mm-hmm. getting national attention, there's a little bit more more support, especially when if it were to be aired on a show like that or something like that.
I don't know. I get the feeling that most of our comedians and people like Ellen DeGeneres, even though she's done amazing things for people and been a quite a humanitarian, I don't know that she would get involved with this because I don't know if her, the people that handle her, would want her to get in the middle of something like this. You know, I've met somebody who wanted to do a story about Mikey on, what's the name of that, Arts and Entertainment Network. They want to do a story about being friends with people and having them hurt you that bad, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And, of course, Mikey doesn't really want to do it, and I keep talking to them because I keep thinking there might be a time when really talking it out like that would be therapeutic for him, so I try not to close the door. But this young woman said to me, you know, she is friends with Ellen DeGeneres, his head producer. And she said, if you, you know, if we could get something going, maybe I could even get you on that show. And I think I would rather have an opportunity with somebody like Ellen DeGeneres to just open up the lines of communication about bullying and about being unkind. I mean, you know, a lot of these families from the Bully movie, they went on the Ellen show. Some of them went on the Today show. Nothing's really changed.
Right.
Nothing's really changed, and it's disheartening and sad, but it's true.
Well, it's a process. I mean, the more people talk, the more it becomes something that's not being ignored, you're going to get to what's called a tipping point. So it doesn't appear there's any change, but more and more people are discussing this. More and more people are at very least being informed that there's something to be concerned about. I mean, if I didn't know you, to be honest with you, I don't know that I would have known about this incident, what happened to my...
I think it is changing. It is changing.
What, Eric?
He says it's changing.
Yeah, it's definitely changing.
Yeah.
It's a slow process, but more and more people are aware of it. More and more people are, like, it's in their face now, and, I mean, students are seeing it now, and they're able to at least want to stand up to it now compared to not knowing anything. And so it is getting out there. It's just a slow process, and it's a difficult one because you that don't really participate. So it's up to, I mean, it is up to individual students to start taking charge of it, you know?
Well, but again, now, you know, we're going to have another night when we talk about that because, as we know, the one young man that I'm supposed to talk to, his mom this week, Terry, he fought back. Finally, after all that time, he fights back and gets suspended for 2 days, and he calls his mom and tells him, you know, he's been suspended, and she says, we'll talk about it when I get home. And he goes home and hangs himself. I mean, good God almighty. In other words, he was more upset about having mom and dad know that he got suspended. I mean, is that what they got to live with for the rest of their lives? I certainly hope not. But on the same token, you have to wonder if that's, you know, if that's the deal, if the kids are that upset about that suspension when you finally stick up for yourself, somehow or another, we have to get obliterated. Somehow or another, there has to be a way that if it's on record that some kid has been continually poking you, picking you, doing whatever to you, and you finally stand up for yourself, there can't be any grave repercussions for it, somehow or another. And I don't have the answer because go ahead.
Yeah, I think that they should get counseling, not detention and not suspension, because what's happening is that the bullied then basically snaps, and that means that you have somebody who is either gentle or timid or passive pushed over the edge where they literally lose it. And that's a symptom of two issues. That's a symptom of a bully that's relentless, and that's also a symptom of somebody that is gentle that literally got pushed over the edge. So that person that got pushed over the edge shouldn't get punished. They should get counseling to give them better coping mechanisms so that they don't go there. But to punish them is ludicrous, absolutely ludicrous.
I want to bring that up, too, because that's been happening a lot. I've been reading about students standing up for other kids, and they become the target. And I'm thinking, you know, students have to come together when standing up to a bully. One-on-one, I think it's really difficult for, you know, you to make a point. But if you have a group of kids that are saying, hey, knock it off, chances are that bully is not going to go after every single one of those kids. Plus, those kids that stand up to bully will have that support. They could lean on each other to help each other if things get out of hand. Plus, the schools will listen if more than one student is going to them saying, this kid is bullying everybody. Something needs to be done. So I just say do it in numbers. It's really important that students, like, get together and do it in numbers than to try to take it on by yourself.
So explain exactly how you think they should do that, Gary. If you know that one kid's being picked on, they should approach the kid that's the bully?
In a group. More than one.
So all of the kids, so say you've got 10 friends together and they've witnessed you being bullied by this one kid. And the 10 of you walk up to this kid in school and say, okay, knock it off. Is that what you do?
You better stop or we're going to say something. We're going to report you. You know, what you're doing is wrong. Leave this kid alone. And, I mean, that's going to make the victim join their little group too. And do it in numbers. I mean, I really believe that's how you have to do it is, you know, tell the bully, stop it. Because the bully's going to look at it and say, wow, 5 kids or 10 kids are telling me to knock it off. I look like a total fool compared to, just one kid going up and say, hey, I don't think what you're doing is right. Knock it off. Because that just turns the target around on him. I think it has to be a group thing. I mean, it has to be in numbers because it is getting – because, I mean, I've been hearing stories about kids standing up and they become the target, and it's sad. It's like the bullies are winning again. They're taking control over, you know, the situation.
Yeah,
and that's why
the way I feel.
We can't let them have that power. We can't let them have that control. Knock it off. You know, and go report it to the principal. 5 kids go in the office, principal's office, say, this kid did this. I mean, the school.
Okay, now that makes sense to me. Taking the 10 kids and going into the office and asking for a sit-down with the principal, not the vice principal, not the vice principal's secretary, not any of those people, the principal, the one who has his job on the line if things go bad in his school. He's the one who's going to listen.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to say, here's the deal. We've seen Billy Smith targeting our friend, Renee Brewer, every day this week, picking on her, pulling her hair, kicking her, tripping her, all this kind of stuff all week. Oh, boy, that kid would be sorry if he did that to me. But anyway, if they did that, that makes a lot of sense to me. I have a feeling that if they confront, if we're talking about 14 and 15 and 16-year-olds, if they confront him 10-on-1 in the school, by the end of the school day, it'll be 30-on-10, and it'll be a mess.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
Case is different, yeah.
Exactly. But what would keep it under control is if the first move was presented to the principal.
Mm-hmm.
And verified. And like I tell everybody, and I counseled people on this very recently in the workplace that have called me, and I've said this on the air, every time things happen to you that aren't good, you should be keeping a journal. And sometimes that's good for the kids in school, too. You know, sometimes it's a good idea if they keep a journal if somebody is harassing them or anything so that they never forget days and times and dates of things happening. And then if it ever gets to that point, I don't remember if I've shared this story with everybody on the radio, but when Mike first was finally going to, we knew he was going to survive. I had all these pictures in my camera that I had taken of Mike in the ICU. And I wouldn't develop them until I was sure he was going to be all right, because I didn't think we'd ever want to see them again if he didn't stay with us, but I didn't know where our heads would be at. So when I was sure he was going to be okay, I developed the pictures, and I was at the Walgreens up here in Palm Beach, and this young black girl, she appeared to be all of maybe 20, maybe at the oldest 21, 22, and she sees me doing these pictures. And I was doing them very privately, and there was nobody else in the store but her and I. And she walked over, and the machine got stuck, and she lifted the top, and she went, and she goes, oh, my gosh, what happened to him? And I told her, and she said, she says, look at this. And she showed me both of her arms. Both of her arms had slice marks on them. And I said, did you do that to yourself, honey? And she goes, no. She said, from the time I was 8 years old until I was 14, the same girl that lived in my neighborhood was mean to me. She would cut me with a knife. She would beat me up. She would cut my hair, almost, you know, like so my mother would have to shave my head. She did all kinds of mean stuff to me. And my mom went to her mom, and they said it wasn't true. And so once my mom tried to talk to her mom, my mom started taking pictures of everything that ever happened to me and writing the dates of the time and everything that took place when this girl hurt her. So at something like age 16, she said, I made another friend. And I said, who's that? And she said, a girl who taught me how to use a knife. And I said, please don't tell me you did something like that. And she said, yes, ma'am. And I said, did you go to jail? And she said, no. She said, they arrested me and brought me in, and they gave me an arraignment date. And we went back, and my mom, who told me to just keep turning the other cheek, but always took pictures and always recorded everything, laid everything out in the judge's chambers and showed everybody what had happened to me by this other little girl. And I'm still in counseling, but I never got any jail time or anything, and she is in more counseling than I am.
Wow.
So
it's ironic that you tell that story. I can see that we're almost done, but I'll just say this real quick. I had met a woman this weekend, and I won't say her name on the air. Hopefully she'll call in within the next couple of days. But she was a guidance counselor, and she's now a therapist, dealing with all types of issues with adults and children, but she says that she has actually counseled children at risk, including the bullies, both bullies and the bullier, because she says the bullies themselves are extremely damaged people, and
mm-hmm.
the harm that they inflict on other people is horrendous, but their makeup that makes them do that to begin with is also horrendous. And a lot of them are coming from a situation they can't control, and unfortunately they're taking it out on innocent victims, but they don't even realize it. So the bullier has to go through as much counseling as the bullied, which is a very interesting fact. So hopefully she's going to call in and talk a little bit about her experience on both sides of the fence.
Well, I mentioned that the other night when we were saying goodnight the other night. I talked to the bullies. I always talk to the kids that I think are out there, or the adults that are out there that are in a scenario that's not healthy and is hurting their heart to any great degree. I mentioned to the bullies, if you're out there and you know you're being a bully and you're not sure why you're doing it and you're not sure how you can stop, and you're not even sure what started it, but you're worried about it, and you know that there's something wrong, you too have to go and find help. This is not just about, you know, I learned this a very, very long time ago. The most difficult child in the room, if you have a room full of babies, the one that is crying the loudest needs you the most.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a fact. That is a fact. So on that note, it is time to close. But I will say that again. If you're a bully and you know you're a bully and you don't know what to do about it and you don't know how to stop it and you don't know who to talk to, you can always call the show. And if you don't want to do that, please find somebody who will listen to you that will lighten your load so that you don't hurt anybody. Because if you're hurting so much that you have to hurt others, you need some help. So, good night, you guys. I love you. Thank you again and again. And I will talk to everybody tomorrow night. From my heart to yours, this is Renee. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, Renee. Good night, Gary.
Good night.
Good night. Good night, honey.